Hello, everybody. Welcome to Nicholas Snow Live. It's great to be with you.
This is Nicholas Snow Live, connecting the circuitry of humanity. Connect with us at NicholasSnowLive.com.
GLAAD has joined 20 other LGBT and human rights organizations in urging President Obama to address the persecution of LGBT people in Jamaica during his upcoming visit to the country. President Obama will meet with leaders from the Caribbean community and with Jamaican Prime Minister Portia Simpson Miller. The intention of the meeting is to discuss the United States' partnership with the region, including through the administration's Caribbean Energy Security Initiative. Highlights of the letter from GLAAD to President Obama include: we are writing to ask that you underscore your long-standing commitment to the rights of LGBT people by raising concerns regarding the violation of human rights of the LGBT community when you travel to Jamaica for meetings with Caribbean community leaders. In your discussion with leaders from Jamaica and from across the Caribbean, you should highlight the importance of supporting and recognizing the meaningful contributions from members of civil society in combating this and other human rights challenges. During your stay in Jamaica, we also urge you to meet with members of civil society, including representatives of the LGBT community. This show is going out live at 11 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time on April 7th, 2015, and it remains available on demand in perpetuity. With me on the show today, I have two very interesting guests. Jamaican-born Max Arthur Mantle studied journalism and photography at Howard University and served in the U.S. Navy. Mantle has been an internationally published fashion photographer for over 15 years, garnering magazine covers, fashion editorial spreads, and a photo book, Beach Boys. Mantle took a break from the lens and returned to writing his debut novel, Batty Boy, the first in a trilogy, released worldwide April 14, 2015. Jarrett Neal, author of What Color Is Your Hoodie? Essays on Black Gay Identity, has this to say about Arthur Mantle's new book. Batty Boy is destined to take place beside B-Boy Blues and Invisible Life as a seminal black gay novel. A coming-of-age novel written with flavor and audacity, Batty Boy ushers readers into an environment where the fluidity of identity, sexual, racial, national, propels its main character through his many adventures. Can't wait to have him on the show. Maurice Tomlinson is a Jamaican lawyer, LGBTI activist, and educator. For nearly 20 years, he has been working with a variety of local and international agencies to combat homophobia and HIV across the Caribbean. He is a senior policy analyst with the Canadian HIV/AIDS Legal Network and partners with various national and regional stakeholders to promote and protect the human rights of Caribbean LGBTI people. Maurice has an extensive record of anti-discrimination endeavors, including the authorship of reports to regional and UN agencies on the human rights situation for LGBTI people, conducting judicial and police LGBTI and HIV sensitization trainings, facilitating human rights documentation and advocacy capacity building exercises, and acting as counsel and or claimant in cases challenging anti-gay laws before the most senior tribunals in the hemisphere. In 2012, Maurice received the inaugural David Kodo Vision and Voice Award, which recognizes individuals who defend human rights and the dignity of LGBTI people around the world. This is what's coming up in the show today, and I cannot wait to have on my guest, and I welcome all of you to participate, and here's how.
Prepare yourself for a snowstorm of global proportion.
It's time for Nicholas Snow Live, the podcast that's all about connecting the circuitry of humanity. Nicholas broadcasts live almost every day, and he wants you to be a part of the conversation. If you are listening live, the phone lines are open now. Call 347-215-8866. That's 347-215-8866. We're screening calls right now, so get dialing. Call 347-215-8866. 215 8866. While he's screening callers for today's broadcast, here's some important information for you. Nicholas uses both Twitter and Facebook to alert listeners just as he's going on the air. At any time, 24/7, you may direct tweet at The Nicholas Snow or post your questions, comments, breaking news, and gossip on the Nicholas Snow Live Facebook page. Nicholas may very well discuss your tweet or comment on the air. When communicating with or about the show using any form of social media, be sure to use the hashtag NicholasSnowLive. You may also Skype into live broadcast from anywhere in the world. For Skype instructions and to review all the Connect with Show options I've just mentioned, simply visit NicholasSnowLive.com and click Connect with the Show in the main submenu. Nicholas also broadcasts regular video chats and interviews on his YouTube channel using Google Hangout. So subscribe at youtube.com/snowbiznow. That's youtube.com/snowbiznow. For all of his social media links, visit NicholasSnowLive.com and click on Social Networks in the main submenu. And now, on with the snow, show! Celebrating his fourth decade as a multimedia entertainment activist, producer and host Nicholas Snow is all about honoring and expressing his life force in a way that makes a difference, while inspiring you to do the same. Reaching millions of people worldwide, Nicholas is definitely a leading primo promo homo on the go-go. Yes, over 6 feet of snow has just drifted into your podcast experience. And here he is, Nicholas Snow.
Hello, everybody. Today's show is entitled Homophobia, Death Threats, and Government Complicity, Jamaican LGBTs Under Attack. And there's no one that knows more about this situation than my first guest, who I've touted at the top of the show, Maurice Tomlinson, who's joining us now from Canada. Hi, Maurice. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Nicholas.
Where exactly in Canada are you?
I'm in Toronto.
Okay, well, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show. I'd love for you, because of your broad knowledge of the LGBT civil rights challenge and atrocities that are happening in Jamaica, to sort of paint an overview for us from your own experience. And also, I understand that you were the target of recent death threats, and I would be interested in knowing the details around those circumstances as well.
All right. So Jamaica has an anti-sodomy law, which dates back to 1864, which criminalizes all forms of intimacy between two men. So including holding hands in the privacy of your bedroom could get you 2 years in prison if you engage in anal intercourse. It's 10 years at hard labor. But that's not really the source of much of the homophobia. It's generated principally by religious fundamentalism, which drifted down from North America late 70s, early 80s, after they lost the culture war up north. These evangelicals came to Jamaica, and they whipped up anti-gay hate right about the time when the AIDS epidemic was hitting. So that was a perfect excuse to blame gays for God's judgment upon them, AIDS. And the musicians in Jamaica grew up in church. All of us grew up in church. We had no choice. And these musicians then performed many, many anti-gay songs. And we have the record of the most anti-gay songs per capita, over 200 plus, which calls for rape of lesbians, shooting and killing of gays, etc. And we're not a quiet society. So all of this anti-gay rhetoric was being heard Monday to Friday on buses, cars, etc. And then on Saturday and Sunday, you hear it in churches. So it kind of saturated the environment with homophobia. And the result is that now we have, at the last poll, a population which is 91% self-identified as homophobic. And the situation for most LGBT is that if you can't insulate yourself by living in a gated community or driving wherever you need to go, you know, you're going to be vulnerable to physical attack. So if you walk main thoroughfares, you know, and are visibly gay, you would be vulnerable to attacks, mob attacks, etc. I have received multiple death threats, and one of the reasons I'm living in Toronto is because when a newspaper in Jamaica outed me because I got married to my husband who's in Canada. I received multiple death threats, including one of my students at the time at university, publishing my schedule online. And I fled when the government basically refused to do anything to assist and to provide me security.
Did you have to leave in the middle of the night? When you say fled, how in danger were you, and how quickly did you need to exit the country?
I had to leave my home immediately because my address was made public online, and my husband, he was a cop with the Toronto Police Service, and through his contact with Interpol, he was advised that for safety reasons, I should leave right away, that there were credible threats. And I went into hiding for 2 days, and then I had to leave when the first flight was available to get me out of Jamaica. I now go back.
Did you have special protection on the way to the airport?
It was supposed to have been provided. The government had been, the Jamaican police had been contacted by other police services in Canada to provide assistance, and they said they would, and nobody showed up. So I did not have any support from the Jamaican government or from the police. So I literally just fled.
My goodness. And your family, your relatives, your friends, they're all in Jamaica, and you just had to leave in the middle of the night, sort of.
Right. My mother and father are very, very concerned because they were also the targets of, you know, a lot of talk. And my mother has asked me not to return to her home in Montego Bay. So when I go to Jamaica, I only go to Kingston to do cases challenging the anti-sodomy law. And I'm pretty much, I like to say, a prisoner because I have to go from the airport with a special transportation that I arrange to the hotel and back to the court to do the cases and then back to the hotel and then back on a plane. So I literally do not get to socialize with people because it's just not considered safe.
Wow. So tell me about other instances of anti-gay violence that you know of, and if you were to describe the conditions for LGBT individuals in Jamaica today, what is a typical experience for them now, and are there people who are out in spite of it?
Right. It really depends on your access to resources in Jamaica, whether you'll be safe as a gay person in the country. So if you can, you can afford to live in a gated community, drive wherever you need to go. You won't be subject to physical violence to the same degree, but you will certainly suffer psychological challenges. For example, you know, you can't be seen with one partner for too long. You're professionally very vulnerable. You know, if you are seen with a male partner, if you're gay or a gay man or female, if you're lesbian. And so it's very challenging to be gay in Jamaica. If you're poor and you have to walk the streets, then, you know, you could be subject to very violent attacks. One instance, for example, was a youngster who at 14 was kicked out because she identified as trans. Her name was Duane Jones. And when at 16, Duane decided to go to a party dressed as she identified, the mob turned on Duane, and the mob was instigated by a member of her church. A female member of her church saw Duane at this party and outed her to the mob because, you know, we in Jamaica view homosexuality as an abomination. And the mob turned on Duane, shot, stabbed, ran over Duane with a car, and then threw her body in the bushes and went back to dance. And despite this being a very public murder, the police have not arrested anyone. Hello?
Yes, I'm here. I'm just speechless.
Hello?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hello? Hello?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm here.
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello? Okay, we have some sort of issue, and I'm going to try to get him back on the line. So I'm going to be back after this.
Did you know I'm an author? At the time of this recording, I have two books out. The first, a Living Powerfully with HIV memoir called Life Positive, A Journey to the Center of My Heart. It takes place throughout Asia and even in Palm Springs. It could be called Eat, Pray, Disclose. The second book, A Return to Brokeback Mountain, photos and interviews from the historic Hollywood premiere. To find these titles, go to NicholasSnowLive.com and click on Books in the main submenu. Spotlight on Palm Springs.
Come to Lulu, the award-winning California bistro. Fabulous breakfast, a luscious three-course Sunday brunch, scrumptious dinners serving fresh fish, perfect steaks, pizzas, salads, and more. Something for everyone. A three-course special to savor from $15.99. The best all-day and night happy hour. There's always a party at Lulu in the heart of downtown Palm Springs on South Palm Canyon and Arenas.
New designer furnishings, sparkling cocktail rings, vintage jeans and shirts for moms, teens, boys, and flirts. Area rugs and stylish bedding design your wedding. Shiny knickknacks and glam Hollywood throwbacks. You'll find it here at Revival. Voted best of the Valley thrift stores. Now with even more new treasures, plus one-of-a-kind consignment and estate items. Fashion, accessories, furniture, it's all in store at Revival. Find it here. Visit us at RevivalStores.com to find a Revival store near you.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Snow. Many of you know that I am HIV positive. I'm living powerfully with HIV because I benefit from the services of the Desert AIDS Project in Palm Springs, California, and I'm very happy to bring you this news from another grateful client of Desert AIDS Project.
I'm more proactive with my health now, I think, than I was before, and I think that's because there's other people that are being proactive with me. You know, there's people that are interested and concerned about it.
A lot of services that are very difficult to access to HIV-infected patients are gathered within one roof. We do have access to substance abuse counselor, mental health services, psychiatrists. We have dental service programs. We have nutritional programs, housing, case management. Very unique in the nation that all the programs, including medical services, are administered within one facility.
Coming here, I felt just an amazing amount of love from Desert AIDS Project. They are people who just care in the community, people who want to put a hand out and say, let me hold yours. And I think that makes all the difference in the world.
For more information, visit DesertAIDSProject.org.
This is Nicholas Snow Live, connecting the circuitry of humanity. Connect with us at NicholasSnowLive.com.
And welcome back to the show. My guest today, Maurice Tomlinson, and I, we had some technical difficulties, but those have been resolved. I'll be bringing him back on in just a moment. I wanted to let you know, if you have a comment, call us at 347-215-8866. That's 347-215-8866. I did promote the presence of author Max Arthur Mantle at the top of the show. Something must have come up for him because he has not called in as planned. But his new book, Batty Boy, I've talked a bit about it. I'll just remind you that it's destined to take a place beside B-Boy Blues and Invisible Life as a seminal black gay novel, a coming-of-age novel written with flavor and audacity. Batty Boy ushers readers into an environment where the fluidity of identity, sexual, racial, national, propels its main character through his many adventures. And Max Arthur Mantle was born in Jamaica. He studied journalism and photography, and I'm sorry that he's not here as planned, but I want you to check out his book, and it is, oh wait, I think he might have called in. Yes, I think we have both Max and Maurice back on the air. So let me bring Maurice back into the studio. Hey, Maurice.
Hi, Nicholas.
And I think I have Max, but maybe it's someone else. Let's check it out.
Excellent.
Hey, you're on the air with Nicholas.
Hi, sorry for the delay, but this is Max Arthur.
How are you?
Okay, great. Well, Max Arthur, you know, Maurice and I were talking about the state of LGBT civil rights in. Are you in a very windy spot, Max Arthur?
I have to change my location. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Thank you. So Maurice and I were talking about the state of the atrocious state of circumstances facing LGBT individuals in Jamaica today. And right before the break, he was talking about how a mob murdered a young – they stopped a party and murdered a young transgender individual because someone from the church had organized – had basically called them out and encouraged the mob to do this. And then the mob just threw her discarded her body and went back to the party. And at that point, Maurice said, hello, hello, and he couldn't hear me anymore, but I said I was speechless. At any rate, to bring you into the conversation, Max Arthur, tell me, I know you were born in Jamaica. At what point did you leave Jamaica, and how current do you stay regarding the status of LGBT civil rights or lack thereof in the country?
Okay, I was born in Jamaica. I left Jamaica in 1992. I was 21 at the time. And I haven't returned. I've never been back to Jamaica since. But I've kept periodic information. I've been following what's going on. But what you just mentioned about the violence, it's not now. It's been like that since I was there. So it might sound very horrific at the time now, but things like that has been going on in Jamaica for years, and nothing has been pretty much improved. So my book mentioned a similar case where somebody was gay bashed and actually murdered, and that was like my writing point of view was from the 90s, and whatever is happening now is pretty much the same thing. So I've kept in touch, but I haven't been back to Jamaica, and quite honestly, I have no interest in returning to Jamaica because I am an openly gay man. I am very flamboyant in my ways, and I embrace my gayness, my blackness, and everything. And I would feel very, very much terrified to be in Jamaica, because even I live in Miami, and even if I'm in any kind of a Caribbean diaspora-based community or where there's a very strong homophobia in certain areas, I feel threatened. So, yes.
Max Arthur, when you were a kid, and then Maurice, I'd love for you to answer this after Max Arthur. How did you hide? When did you become aware of of the fact that you were gay, and how did you keep it a secret to protect yourself?
Well, for me, I wasn't necessarily overly effeminate. I was what I used as my shield was that I grew up in Kingston, in a affluent. My friends and my peers were affluent, and to some degree, that is a little bit more. Your flamboyance is a little more tolerated, or it's not as brutal in the upper echelons of Jamaican society. If you aspire to be a little Americanized, per se, or if you embrace a worldly point of view and you're not necessarily holding on to the stereotypes of being a batty boy or a butu or some per se, people try and treat you accordingly. So I pretty much had peers, and I latched on to people who would protect me. And I can remember a point where I was in New Kingston, which is pretty much a little bit more liberal part of town. And I was at a club, and I was approached, and I didn't know how to respond. I was like 20 at the time. I didn't know how to respond, and I was like fearful. And I went through all the issues of for somebody coming out and exploring and everything. I mean, I knew I was different. I knew I wasn't necessarily the guy who was going to marry the girl or have girlfriends in high school and stuff. But I used various ways of curtailing any kind of threat of being bashed by having friends or being more academically successful and stuff like that. I had, like, defense mechanisms, I would say.
Okay. I'm just going to mute you while Maurice answers the call because I'm getting some odd background noise from your phone. So I'm going to let Maurice answer the question and bring you back on. So Maurice, what about your experience in growing up? How did you? What sort of homophobia did you experience personally, and how did you try to protect yourself from it?
Well, unlike Max, I was always identified as effeminate, and therefore it was harder for me to mask my orientation. And my mother even says that she knew I was gay at age 12. So something she appreciated but never, you know, made much of for safety's sake. And for me, it was very tough growing up in Jamaica, especially because I attended all boys schools. The pressure was intense, and so I hid by becoming very active in the church. I was always on the choir, I was always involved in youth groups. So it was about trying to suppress or bury or kill this deviance. And I was more pitied than anything else. I would be bullied, but I always responded very sharply. I developed a very sharp tongue as a defense mechanism. And that allowed me to escape much of the assault. I also was raised in a middle-class home, so I had some level of insulation. I eventually got married because I thought that would cure me, and I was with my best female friend for 10 years, and when her last relationship ended and mine ended, you know, we thought that, you know, this would have been the cure that I needed, just regular straight sex. And, of course, that didn't work, and the marriage failed. But, thankfully, I have a son, and we have a son, and he no longer lives in Jamaica, neither does his mother. But I tried everything. I did the ex-gay thing to try, ex-gay ministry thing to try and cure myself. I was very involved in church. I really went through a lot of changes. But I eventually came out to myself fully and finally in my early 30s after the marriage failed, and I realized that there was this thing was not going away. It wasn't going to be prayed away. And that's when I started to work more assiduously for LGBT liberation in Jamaica.
Well, I have to commend you because, you know, I came out fairly early in life in my early 20s in 1983 in Arizona, and I was very public in the media around 1984, and that was very conservative. But, you know, we weren't, I wasn't in danger of being murdered by simply doing that and walking out of the radio station. So
right.
I really commend you. I'm going to bring Max Arthur back on. Max Arthur, would you please tell me what a batty boy is?
A batty boy is, it's a derogatory slur. It's a very hateful term used by Jamaicans to describe men who are effeminate or perceived to be gay or bisexual.
It's like, but basically the Jamaican version of fag?
Yes, yes. But the use, I have reappropriated it in the sense that I want it to be embraced by gay Jamaicans and use as some kind of an empowerment. It's like using the N-word in the black community. The change, you can't hurt someone, you can't, the word cannot hurt you if you change the meaning and its context. So that's what I have done with my book.
Well, that's what we did with the word queer. You know, Queer Nation
exactly.
started using
yeah.
the word queer, and I had a TV show in L.A. in the 90s for 7 years called Tinseltown's Queer.
Yeah.
And so I totally get about reclaiming words. And, you know, because I don't have the experience of the word, it neither occurred to me as something positive nor negative when I heard the title of your book. By the way, I know that Max Arthur and Maurice, that you're both friends on Facebook, but have you ever actually spoken or met in person? Are you friends in real life?
No. No, we haven't, but we have met through social media, and Maurice has actually gotten an advanced copy of my book, and he wrote the most commending blurb that I will cherish. So
what?
I have a strong, like...
Go ahead.
We are friends. I mean, even though we haven't met, I mean, he has embraced what I'm about, and I completely respect what he's doing. I mean, he's very active, from what I've seen and followed. He's like a champion in the LGBT community in Jamaica.
Well, some of the most powerful people in my life I've met through social networking and have yet to meet in person and have come to know and love, so I completely relate to that. Maurice, what would you like to say about Max Arthur's novel?
I think, as I said in the blurb, it's a wonderful unfolding of the complexity of being gay in Jamaica and in the diaspora, and discovering yourself and not having mentors and making bad choices and recovering from those and failing again. It's like so relatable on many levels to many of the things I experience and many of the things many LGBT Jamaicans and the diaspora will experience or have experienced, that it will be immediately almost cathartic and powerful for them. And I really commend it to those persons who want to get a sense of what it is like to grow up in Jamaica, be gay, and have to wrestle with family, church, religion, etc., and survive or fail. It's a very powerful book, and I absolutely commend it to anyone who wants to get an immediate sense of the reality for us.
It's available at maxarthurmantle.com. Is it net?
.net.
Yes.
The hardcover I'll sign, and that's available at on my website, maxarthurmantle.net. And the paperback edition and the ebook edition is going to be available on Amazon.
Fantastic. Tell me, Max Arthur, a little bit about confirmed public appearances you'll be doing with your book.
Okay. My signing begin on May 1st in Atlanta. I'll be at several places throughout the summer. I'll be at Cat's Cafe in Atlanta. I'll be in Houston at Brothers to Brother Book Club. I'll be at the Heart and Soul event, also in Houston. I'll be at Dallas in the LGBT Center. I'll be in Washington, D.C. Gay Pride, a Black Gay Pride in May, the end of May during the memorial. I'll be in Philadelphia at the William Way LGBT Community Center. I'll be in New York, also at the LGBT Community Center. I'll be in New York City for the Gay Pride and Harlem Pride Festival, the New York Public Library. I'll be in Chicago during the Black Pride, so I'll be touring.
You'll be everywhere, and your appearances will be added to maxarthurmantle.net.
Yes, currently on my sign-in page. Like, there's an entire calendar listing of my appearances and schedule.
Fantastic, Maurice. I want to return to the hard-hitting reality for LGBTs in Jamaica right now, and I just want you to tell me and my listeners, what is the solution? What can be done? I know that you're fighting the issues in the courts. Is there a way for people to support that effort? Just help empower me and my listeners to help in the fight.
Sure. Yes, we are doing several things. We are doing court cases. We're doing public demonstrations and visibility campaigns because we know that a lot of the hate is driven by ignorance and fear. We are also doing police LGBTI sensitization trainings because we need the police to first offer protection for us, and that will allow us to be visible. And this visibility, again, as I said, is what's crucial to reducing the fear. The major stumbling block for our initiatives is the church. We acknowledge that the fundamentalist religion is driving a lot of the homophobia in Jamaica and also in North America. What we need, in addition to financial resources to fight the cases and to do the trainings and do all that stuff, we need people to call on their politicians in North America to publicly acknowledge that it is imported homophobia that is driving Jamaican, hate for gays. We need the international community to start acknowledging the role of importing homophobia into Jamaica, because that is what's going to disrupt the narrative that, you know, Jamaicans are naturally anti-gay and this is a part of our culture and all of that nonsense. We need to disrupt that narrative. And politicians respond to what their constituents tell them, and we need constituents to tell them, look, this is the reality. It's an important issue. And once that starts happening, it will make it easier for us to counter the churches in Jamaica who are constantly pushing out that this is, you know, they have to bash gays because it's a part of Jamaican culture. In terms of how people can financially support our work, there is the Canadian HIV/AIDS Legal Network that I work with, Canadian HIV/AIDS Legal Network, and persons can make donations there. All funds will go towards legal cases challenging anti-sodomy laws in the Caribbean and in Jamaica in particular, police training for LGBT sensitization, human rights advocacy and documentation training, and capacity building with local groups. We have a very big budget, but we know every little bit helps. So if they can go to the Canadian HIV/AIDS Legal Network and just note in their donation, Caribbean LGBTI work. That's Caribbean LGBTI work.
And that website, by the way, is that website for the Canadian HIV/AIDS Legal Network, I believe, is aidslaw.ca.
Correct.
Yes,
aidslaw.ca.
It helps to sit in front of Google when you're doing your show. I would like to ask Max Arthur, what are you doing personally, and is there a specific goal that you have to help in your own way fight the homophobia in your country of birth?
I think education can be of use where it challenges the mindset of people, and my book is pretty much to open create a thought process and people having exchanging their opinions about how they feel about homophobia in Jamaica. But in my personal experience there, it's so much homophobia, it's so much embedded in the culture in terms of the music, the dancehall music, just the basic mannerism of the people, where it can be a struggle. But I also realize that the affluent people in Jamaica, they live a separate, as in any country, I suppose. The gay affluent people in Jamaica, if they were more visible and made changes, because I know a couple of gay people who are in Jamaica there, but they're not visible. If they were visible and more challenging of the system, of course it's going to have a lot of detrimental effects or consequences. But if they were protected and if they became more outspoken and not run away or just not ignore or just live into their niches, it will create changes, because all of the issues that are brought in the eyes are people like the Gully Queen. Those are disadvantaged gay youths that are homeless and they have no way out and they are brutalized and killed. The affluent gay Jamaicans, they're in a state of security, in my opinion, and they don't have those issues to deal with. They have, if they were more visible, I think they could create much of more change. And what I have, like, formulated myself is to, I would like to work with the JFLAG in sense of my book sales, donating a percentage, and helping the JFLAG, because they're doing a very good job. And I think if they, the resources, if they have more resources to educate, provide even grassroots training, or having the financial resources to be more visible, that could create a larger impact.
Okay, great. Now, both you and Maurice have said things that appropriately tie into something I want to read, and then I'll return to each of you for a final remark. So GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, is encouraging President Obama to raise this issue when he visits when he visits Jamaica, and I referenced the letter from GLAAD to President Obama earlier in the show, but I just want to read more from it. So it says, across the Caribbean, activists and civil society groups are working to combat and respond to violence and discrimination against the LGBT community. These activists perform tireless work in challenging climates. In many Caribbean countries, including Jamaica, consensual adult sexual acts are criminalized, and these laws often serve to justify and legitimize discrimination and violence against LGBT persons. Last year in Jamaica, a plaintiff contesting the buggery law withdrew his court challenge after he and his family were targeted with threats. Lesbians, bisexual women, and transgender people are additionally impacted by gender-based violence. JFLAG, a Jamaican human rights organization advocating for the rights of LGBT people, reported 231 instances of violence or discrimination against the LGBT community between 2009 and 2012. LGBT people in Jamaica often live in a climate of fear of violence, including threats, sexual attacks, and other physical violence. Activists also reported widespread discrimination against the LGBT community in access to services, including housing, employment, and health care. Access to health care is of particular concern, and activists report that members of the LGBT community are fearful of seeking treatment, including for HIV, given experiences of mistreatment or discrimination based on their gender identity or sexual orientation. Jamaican civil society leaders and activists have responded boldly to these challenges, launching media campaigns to counter homophobia in the country, providing direct services to homeless LGBT people, training security forces on the proper treatment of the LGBT community, and sensitizing healthcare workers to the treatment of LGBT people. A meeting with activists working for the rights of LGBT community, as well as others advocating for human rights in Jamaica, would underscore your administration's commitment to full equality and human rights and highlight the leading role that these organizations play in bettering their societies. As you stated in 2013, the strength and success of all countries and all regions depends in part on protecting and supporting civil society. In your bilateral meetings with Jamaican leaders, you should underscore the importance of support for civil society, including organizations working on behalf of the LGBT population. Your upcoming trip to Jamaica represents a concrete opportunity to highlight the U.S. commitment to strengthening and supporting civil society and to demonstrate the United States' prioritization of human rights as part of its bilateral and multilateral relationships. And there's many, many different signals on this letter, which you can find at glad.org. So with that said, I'd love to return to each of my guests for a final word, and we'll start with you, Max Arthur. What would you like to say in conclusion for today's show?
I think that to have GLAAD make an attempt to petition President Obama is a very bold and courageous move, and a commendable move. And I think its effectiveness can be would really address if he actually meets, if the president actually meets with these grassroots LGBT organizations and community leaders in Jamaica and set some kind of discussion, because it will address, I mean, he will get the first hand experience of knowledge and opinions and views of people who are living in Jamaica and seeing what they have been through. And it might sound, on another point, very harsh, but I think if there are economic sanctions that undermine certain factors of Jamaican society that are homophobic, that will hit their pocket and that will create change. Because, it's, for example, in the tourism industry, gay Americans or Europeans who travel to Jamaica, they come with their dollars, and they're pretty much treated and tolerated because of the money. So if there is some kind of economic sanction to kind of suggest that, okay, you need to realize that humanitarian efforts are should be made to address LGBT people, they should be treated with respect and accepted and tolerated, or it's going to hit your pocket. That would make a big impact, I think.
Okay, well, I want to congratulate you on your book, Batty Boy, available on Amazon and other platforms, and signed hard copies available at Max Arthur Mantle, that's Mantle, maxarthurmantle.net. Thank you for taking the time to be on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And Maurice, I'd love to go to you for some final comments. We're not rushed, by the way. What would you like to say in summary of what we've talked about on the show today and your advice to the world?
Yes, I would like to start with my response to what Max said about boycotts or economic sanctions. I'm very wary about people thinking about a general boycott. That's a very blunt instrument and should not be used in the case of Jamaica, because it would just make the lives of the Jamaican LGBTI community much more vulnerable. There are more targeted sanctions, I think is what Max was trying to suggest. So there are some hotels in Jamaica that are very tolerant, and most of our hotels are like mini fortresses. They're resorts. The people don't really get exposed to the vulnerabilities of LGBTI people. So there are some you can go to and be treated very well, and we would like to promote and encourage those who are doing that to continue doing that. So we want to encourage people to go to those resorts. There are others where that treatment is not available, but there is discrimination against LGBTI people. And we want to create a kind of positive provocation. Say, look, if you support LGBTI rights, you'll get more tourists to your hotel. And if you want to know which ones to visit and which ones to avoid, you can just contact the LGBTI groups in Jamaica. JFLAG is a very good one, and they can point you in the right direction. So I wouldn't suggest a general boycott. I think that, you know, there are resorts which you should be avoiding, and the ones that are supportive, we want to support them and protect them and encourage them. In relation to how generally the president should respond, as I've said, he must first acknowledge that a lot of what is going on in Jamaica is driven by imported homophobia from American televangelists. This recognition is important to disrupt the narrative that this is homegrown Jamaican culture. This is not. This is imported. And we need the Jamaican people to hear that from an American president. The American president should also try and acknowledge that, look, you in America had a challenging time getting rid of these laws, and these attitudes still persist. Homophobic attitudes still persist. You just have to look at the Religious Freedom Recognition Acts sweeping the southern United States. You know, you still have these challenges. But he should acknowledge that when you overcome these challenges, there are many positives economic, professional, etc. And he should try and sell the positive to the Jamaican government and to the people and offer assistance, you know, offer to help Jamaica overcome the challenges which America is itself still wrestling with. So we don't need imperialistic approaches that will just alienate and frustrate the effort. But he can certainly share best practices as leader to leader. Because personally, I think the Jamaican Prime Minister doesn't support the anti-sodomy law. She has said so herself. But she's afraid of the churches. She needs to stay in power. And so he can share how they have managed to overcome this issue. He has evolved on the issue of marriage equality. Explain to our Prime Minister what causes evolution, etc. So share as an equal. Don't come across as imperialistic because it's just going to alienate the population and make it harder for us to make advances. I think that his visit is very important. And people know where he stands on LGBT rights. I think he should just use this. He's not standing for re-election, and I'm sure the Republicans would attack him if he was to acknowledge that religious fundamentalism drove a lot of Jamaican homophobia. But he has nothing to lose at this point. That's the bottom line. So he could do it, and it would be a wonderful admission, and it's true. It's not a lie. You know, and it would help to disrupt the narrative, and that's the most important contribution I think he can make to the LGBT struggle in Jamaica. We're continuing our work. We're challenging cases. Again, if people want to support, by supporting the cases we're doing or the police training or the human rights documentation, etc., they can visit aidslaw.ca, that's aidslaw.ca, and make a donation there. And just indicate Caribbean LGBTI work.
Okay. Go to aidslaw.ca for the Canadian HIV/AIDS Legal Network, and when you make a contribution, indicate that it's for Caribbean LGBTI work. I also want people to know that JFLAG, the organization that has been referred to throughout the show, their website address is jflag.org, jflag.org. JFLAG is the first human rights organization in the history of Jamaica to serve the needs of LGBT peoples, and over time it became the first port of call for the media, resulting in JFLAG assuming the role of the mouthpiece for the LGBT community. JFLAG is a nonprofit NGO that it is in the business of promoting social change, furtherance of the well-being of the members of the LGBT community through a range of internationally directed and externally focused tools, including public education, crisis intervention and empowerment, research, rights-based advocacy, legal aid, and legal reform. Their mission is to promote social change by empowering the Jamaican LGBT community and build tolerance for and acceptance of the LGBT community by the wider Jamaican society. Their vision, and frankly the vision of this show and the vision of my guest, I imagine, is the creation of a Jamaican society that respects and protects the human rights and inherent dignity of all individuals, irrespective of their sexual orientation and gender identity, a Jamaica where there is the freedom to be for all people. Max Arthur, I want to go back to you because I think it's only fair to make sure that Maurice understood what you were talking about when you talked about using the power of economics. Was there anything you wanted to add?
Well, I think he elaborated quite clearly, like what I was intending to say, that not necessarily a general across-the-board sanction of Jamaica, that would be like horrific, but just a what
focusing.
He said, just
I think the point is to focus where you spend your dollars in Jamaica, because there are people in Jamaica that are completely supportive of this, and they're even politicians. So basically, focus where you shine the light of your economic power and your voice on those that are support the movement, and do what we all can to highlight those that are trying to keep us down.
Yes, correct. Exactly. Correct.
Well, I really want to thank all of you for taking all of you. I want to thank all of my listeners and both of you for taking the time to be on my show today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure as well. And I want to thank all of the listeners for participating, and Once again, my show is now live Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. Each episode is available on demand after the live broadcast. And here's some information how you can engage with me in an ongoing fashion.
You've been listening to Nicholas Snow Live. Find all of our advertisers and everything Nicholas Snow at NicholasSnowLive.com. Nicholas uses both Twitter and Facebook to alert listeners just as he's going on the air. Anytime, 24/7, you may direct tweet at TheNicholasSnow or post your questions, comments, breaking news, and gossip on the Nicholas Snow Live Facebook page. Nicholas may very well discuss your tweet or comment on the air when communicating with or about the show using any form of social media. Be sure to use the hashtag NicholasSnowLive. You may also Skype into live broadcast from anywhere in the world. For Skype instructions and to review all the Connect with Show options I've just mentioned, simply visit NicholasSnowLive.com and click Connect with the Show in the main submenu. Nicholas also broadcasts regular video chats and interviews on his YouTube channel using Google Hangouts. So subscribe at YouTube.com/SnowBizNow. That's YouTube.com/SnowBizNow. For all of his social media links, visit NicholasSnowLive.com and click on Social Networks in the main submenu. This show is produced and copyrighted by Nicholas Snow Productions, LLC. All rights reserved. Thank you for being a part of the snowstorm. We are honored by your presence.